We'll move on to our last case, Murphy versus Eddie Murphy Productions. Mr. Gallup.
May it please the court.
My name is Angel Kogalich, and I represent Daryl Murphy, the plaintiff in this matter. The precise issue before you this morning on this case is whether the district court abused its discretion when it denied our request for some additional time to investigate allegations of fraud in the original Murphy case. The original Murphy case was completed with a ruling that was issued on February 15th of 2007, basically granting defendant's motion for summary judgment. I was retained around March 25th of 2009. During the time period from March 25th until June 1st, what we uncovered, or what we could have uncovered, was that some sort of fraud might have been used in order to secure a favorable ruling on their motion for summary judgment. The exact nature of their fraud I couldn't ascertain during that time period. And the reasons for that are rather simple. The record was not in order, and the exhibits that were in the record could not be viewed. Because of that, we raised these issues with the district court. And we asked district court to give us additional time. The precise question before you is again, whether the district court should have granted us additional time. This case is different. It's very different from every other case where the court had to deal with that same issue, additional time, extension of time. We did not have any complaint on file. There was no discovery. There were no deadlines. There was no schedule. The only thing that was before this court, before the district court, was how much time should we grant plaintiff to investigate the allegations of fraud, specifically the allegations of fraud upon the court. The standard is very high on for stating allegations of fraud upon court. You have to be very specific. This is a very serious matter. It's because of that that we wanted the district court to assist us in this investigation. Instead of that, the district court has imposed rather strict requirements, time requirements, without any assistance. The situation is somewhat awkward because the plaintiff, in order to file a complaint, had to have enough evidence to proceed. At the same time, the evidence that was necessary to seriously assess the situation was under exclusive control of the defendants. And that's the reason we wanted to stay before the district court. Because voluntarily, the plaintiff, while he was pro se, he filed a complaint. And we withdrew that complaint immediately because we realized that it is not specific enough and it has to be withdrawn.
What's the significance of these blank DVDs? I didn't understand that.
The blank DVDs are significant at least from what we can ascertain up to this point, is because they have completely shifted the burden on the motion for summary judgment. If they were blank at the time when they were submitted, and everything indicates that they were actually blank, even though the district court right now is refusing to...
Did the parties listen to them? Did the judge listen to them, or what?
The district court, that's what's unusual about it, had an opportunity to say that. That's a simple factual question. Did the court see this or did not see this? And they have avoided that issue. The burden of proof, without going into technical aspects of it, on a motion of summary judgment, still must be on the movement to some extent. And that burden of proof could not have been met if those exhibits were, in fact, blank. And so what is troubling about it is not only that one form of those exhibits were blank, namely the DVDs, but also the more old-fashioned VHS tapes were also useless for purposes of comparison. I call to your attention also the fact that the district judge in its ruling on February 15, 2007 is also misquoting one of the most important cases on this point. Specifically, the district court is relying on Sealy versus Gibb. And that case stands for a proposition that it is possible to use circumstantial evidence to show access. And the district court is specifically saying that that case stands for the opposite proposition, namely that you cannot use similarities in order to, you cannot use circumstantial evidence to prove access. There are other factual errors in that opinion issued on February 15, 2007. He's actually, the district court is actually putting the line when supposedly all the characters were completed 3 months ahead of what defendants are claiming themselves. January, he claims that in January of 1998...
In that order of 2007, the judge said he'd looked at these DVDs. Are you saying he didn't? Are there other DVDs or what?
What he's saying is he basically is saying that he looked into one comparison DVD that was submitted by plaintiff in support of their response or denial or response to motion for summary judgment. But at that point, which is very important, as soon as plaintiff realized, and he was pro se already at this point, that the judge only looked into one DVD of supposedly allegedly comparisons, he realized that the judge should have seen five DVDs. And he filed a motion to reconsider and came before the district judge, and the district judge basically wouldn't give him 5 minutes.
Now, wait a second.
This is plaintiff.
This is a motion filed, what?
This was a
reconsideration after the 2007 order?
There was a timely motion to reconsider filed after the
February
15, 2007 order.
Okay, and that was denied.
And that was denied.
Well, then was there an appeal?
There was an appeal, but the gentleman, my client, was handling it himself. And apparently he didn't know how to proceed, and then it was dismissed for technical reasons.
Well, that's unfortunate, but there's nothing we can do about that, right? I mean,
that's what defendants would like you to think. We are not trying to relitigate the old litigation. We know that that's finished. But there is a type of fraud that that we can allege and that he did allege.
What would the fraud be relevant to? If the judge looked at this comparison video and based his judgment on it, what's the materiality of any fraud?
Well, the judge did not look at plaintiff's video. There's no evidence at all right now.
Well, he said he did in his order.
What he says that he looked into one comparison DVD.
Well, he said it was submitted by the plaintiff.
But that one comparison DVD is not even a fifth of plaintiff's work.
Well, I know, and that presumably was what you complained about in your motion for reconsideration. But that's all gone. That's all part of the original case. I don't understand.
What we discovered subsequently is that the most central point for the defense, and that's what was used in order to defeat the claim for copyright infringement, was the allegation of Mike Mandel in his declaration that they were only filming at 20 seconds a week. And if you use that, that's a misrepresentation, plain misrepresentation. The actual speed that they were using to film was 120 seconds or six times faster. And we found that after we retained and after we started investigating this case. If that is true, then the whole argument that was used to obtain positive ruling and motion for summary judgment is basically false. If they actually were able to film 120 seconds a week, they could have easily filmed the first episode by January 1st of 99 using defendant's work. And the whole argument against that on the ruling for motion for summary judgment was based on the false assumption that they could not have even done that. So by using false misrepresentation, they have reduced plaintiff's complaint to a physical impossibility. And that is a very powerful argument, but it turns out to be false. And this is new new evidence. Plaintiff didn't know anything about this until like May of 1999. So that's the basis for the complaint on theory of fraud upon the court. And as we pointed out in our brief, the district courts have an obligation to assist people to investigate, and the district court could do this on its own to find out whether these allegations are true or not. And instead of that, the district court has imposed rather strict requirements and then, you know, basically eliminated any further investigation. Immediately, basically, or 2 months after, pro se plaintiff was finally able to retain an attorney. The series of attorneys that were disqualified because of conflict of interest in this case is amazing. Because people basically did not, they claim conflict of interest. That only shows like how the discrepancy between the power on one side and a pro se defendant on the other side. I see that my time is out. So,
but did the judge discuss this 120 seconds a week?
Never
issue?
Mentioned it. It was completely ignored, and it was ignored because defendants basically suggested something else. They suggested that this is all res judicata, that cannot come back again, and that this is just because...
I meant in the original case.
It was not discussed in the original case at all.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gallage. Ms. Flint?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Tacey Flint. I am representing several of the defendants in this matter, with the exception of Harpo Television Productions. I'll start where Your Honors left off with Mr. Gallage about the Mendel affidavit in the 120 seconds discrepancy that a plaintiff now claims to have uncovered. The district court did not discuss the 120 second discrepancy in the alleged discrepancy in the summary judgment opinion. The 120 second claim had not arisen until this litigation, and the 20 second claim, which was in the Mendel affidavit in the original case, was not central to the district court's opinion. In fact, it wasn't relied upon at all. The district court relied on the Mendel affidavit for the proposition that the characters in the PJs had been established and decided upon before plaintiff's documentary was ever sent to the Oprah Winfrey Show. In other words, that an independent creation defense was one of the three grounds on which summary judgment was appropriately granted to the defendants in the Murphy litigation, but did not discuss the 20-second point. And more to address the 120-second point further, plaintiff has said that he has found evidence that Mr. Mendel's initial statement that they recorded 20 seconds per week is incorrect. He asserted that in a motion in the district court in this current Murphy 3 litigation, but the motion does not cite to an affidavit, doesn't cite to any evidence of record, and the appellate brief also doesn't identify what the evidence is. But most importantly, if there is a factual dispute on how many seconds per week of the PJs were filmed, that was something that would have been proper to raise on summary judgment. That indicates a dispute of fact, not fraud, in our motion for summary judgment. And the same is true as to the plaintiff's primary claim that two recordings submitted by defendants in support of summary judgment were defective. It's, as the district court explained, that just does not support a plausible claim of fraud. Plaintiff has never said why it could possibly make sense that defendants would choose to submit blank exhibits in support of their own motion for summary judgment in order to gain some advantage in litigation, and there is no theory on which that makes sense. And as Your Honor pointed out, when the district court granted summary judgment in the Murphy 1 litigation, it rested on, it noted evidence submitted by plaintiff, the comparison DVD, which has never been questioned. There's no suggestion that the comparison DVD was not fully viewable, was not plaintiff's best presentation of alleged similarities between his documentary and the PJs. Just to explain a little bit the motion for reconsideration that was addressed, after the summary judgment opinion was issued in Murphy 1. Plaintiff moved for reconsideration on the ground that his counsel should have submitted additional evidence. His appointed counsel should have submitted additional evidence in opposition to summary judgment. The district court denied that motion for reconsideration, saying, you know, maybe you wish you had submitted more evidence, but that doesn't meet the grounds for reconsideration. In summary, plaintiff has not offered any evidence here that could rise to the level of a grave miscarriage of justice, which is what the Supreme Court has identified as the standard for an independent action of fraud. That's what the district court recognized below. That's what Judge Dara, who was the same judge in Murphy 1, reviewing the summary judgment evidence, that's what he found here when he said there's plenty of support for that summary judgment opinion. As he said in his opinion in 2007, he reviewed plaintiff's DVD. He said it again at the hearing on motion for reconsideration. He said that he'd reviewed all the evidence. And Judge Dara properly concluded that nothing the plaintiff had found in the several months that this litigation went on in the district court could plausibly support a claim for fraud. I just want to emphasize the plaintiff had the benefit of multiple extensions. The district court authorized in March discovery in which to benefit plaintiff in attempting to craft a claim for fraud. Even with all of that, plaintiff was never able to come up with a plausible theory of any fraud that could possibly have been committed in Murphy 1, likely because there was no such fraud. So if there are no further questions, I would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Flint. Mr. Gallich, your time had expired, but you can have another minute. Incidentally, why did you name Harpo as a defendant? They're rather indignant about that. They don't see what they have to do with this.
Plaintiff did that while he was pro se, so we have no objection to them at this point to not being part of this litigation. What didn't come out in the district court, apparently, is this. The declaration of Mike Mandel, the original of that declaration, should have been submitted and filed with the district court so that we can actually examine it. The original declaration was not filed. The signature that we found a lot of signatures of Mike Mandel in the file. The signature on that copy of his declaration is very different from all other signatures. Potentially, that is a forgery. We don't know for sure. But if it is, it has a significant it's very important for the purpose of determining whether this was actually fraud upon the court or not. They have refused to cooperate, even though now they're admitting that on March 25th, the judge authorized some discovery. They have resisted it in May on the grounds that this is a new case that has nothing to do with the old case, and they would not let us know what was actually done in discovery during the previous litigation. So to some degree, this is this disingenuous position that they are advancing right now. The question here is, if this was indeed Mike Mandel's signature, then who prepared this false declaration? And if the attorneys actually assisted Mike Mandel in preparing this litigation, then since they are officers of the court, there's enough there to state a claim based on fraud upon the court.
So you want to depose him, is that right, or what?
We want access to the original declaration of Mike Mandel.
And well, I think that's access. Is it? It's not in the record.
It's not in the record, Judge. And
Who would you be seeking access from?
From the defendants, because it's their burden. It was their local rule 5.2. They must file it with the court. And if they did that, we might have been able to finish all of this within the time that was given to us by the court.
So did you ask the judge to order them to?
I asked the judge to order them. Yes, to produce those documents. He basically refused to address the question. I do want to call to your attention that shows the prejudice that this judge had towards this plaintiff. This plaintiff was in court since September of 98, and he was pro se until March 25th of 99. On November 19th, his motion to appoint him an attorney was emphatically denied. The judge is telling him three times, "Mr. Murphy, I'm warning you third time, There is Rule 11, and you can be held responsible for attorney's fees if you don't have good faith for this.
It's not customary to appoint lawyers in for plaintiffs in commercial cases, of course.
But in this case, they have consistently appointed an attorney to represent him previously. And so during this time, when he finally had an attorney, then all the investigation was cut in 2 months, basically. And then the court took more than 2 months to rule on that motion by mail, without allowing us actually to provide them with specific information, additional information, why we needed more time. So
what is this document? What is this in 12th attachment?
Yes.
To your brief. What is this document? It says Declaration of Mike Mendell. This is the one you say is a forgery?
But potentially that signature there, because it's so different from every other signature on file, potentially that is a forgery.
Okay, but this is the declaration. So what is it you want from the defendants?
We would like them to give us the original declaration with the original signature.
This copy.
Yes.
Is that what you want?
Yes. And so that our writing expert can tell us whether that's a forgery or not. It's very significant, because if it is a forgery, then we need to find out who did it. And for purposes of stating a claim for fraud upon the court, we have to be very specific, as the court knows well. We can't just say that frauds happen. We have to say what kind of fraud happened. We need to say who did it. And the significance of the blank DVDs is not for us, and it's not for the court right now to think about what they were thinking when they did this. The question is, did they actually do it or not? And in reality, if they submitted them blank, it's quite possible, and they are actually daring us to say, look, in order for you to stand up, you have to say that even the court was on this fraud. We are investigating. Nobody's saint a priori. And if there's indications that this court was prejudiced, then if I find evidence that indicates that's it, then I have an obligation to bring it up. And at this point, based on everything and the opinion that we know, the district judge doesn't mention anything specific in his February 15, 2007 regarding any exhibits.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gallis and Ms. Flint. And the court...